is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. Reporting from the streets of D.C., I'm Pete Tucker.
We're going to go in peace, and we're going to have those rallies until Clark and every other major contractor in this city hear our voices. We live in this city. Many of us are born in this city. It's only fair that we have an opportunity to work and feed our families. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Brothers, I'm telling you, I have a good job. I got a good job. But I'm about to send my daughter off to college. And if they close the door on you in terms of the laborers, if they close the door on you, your sons, your daughters, your brothers, your sisters, if they close the door in building these buildings, they'll close the door on her when it's time for her to apply for a job. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived because you got a white collar, you got a degree. Don't be deceived because if they close the door on the front end, they'll close it on the back end. And so that's why we're here. Many of these pastors are here. We're here for our sons. We're here for our daughters, for our grandchildren. Because we know they close the door on you on the front end. When it's time to hire those administrators, time to hire those clerks, and hire those white-collar jobs, they'll do the exact same thing. Because it's systematic racism.
That's Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference President Pastor Patrick Walker, speaking Thursday at Greater New Hope Baptist Church. DC Jobs or Else, a coalition of churches, community groups, and labor organizations, put on the event, which turned into an action as the group marched to City Center, a nearly $1 billion construction project being built on five city blocks of public land. As the entrances to the site were blocked off by protesters, the Fight Back spoke with native Washingtonian Eric Carter Bay, who said Clark Construction, which is handling much of the construction services for the City Center project, isn't doing enough for district residents.
You know, let's be fair. The 1%ers is killing us, man. You know what I mean? That's the only thing about it. The 1%ers is killing us. We have to do something about that. We all do have to do something about that. Because everybody feeling this crunch. Black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, everybody in the United States is feeling this crunch. And it's nothing we can do but what we're doing now to show the people in the world that we are trying to fight for what's ours in our city. So you're not coming in our city taking nothing from us. You take something from me, I take something from you, I get locked up. Clark is stealing all these jobs. Let's try to lock their ass up. They thieves, man. They come in the city, steal money, and we can't lock them up. But what we're going to do, we'll shut their ass down.
Later in the program, we'll hear more from Eric Carter Bay, Pastor Walker, and other protesters, including Reverend George Gilbert Jr. But first, we turn to a recent rally outside D.C. jail, where activists protested the criminal justice system and its disproportionate impact on people of color and called for an end to what they referred to as the new Jim Crow. Here are some of the voices from the President's Day protest outside D.C. jail, which was organized by Occupy D.C.'s Criminal Injustice Committee and recorded by Luke Kuhn of D.C. Indie Media.
I'm from the Criminal Injustice Committee out of Occupy D.C. I'd like everybody to give a round of applause for everybody. This is real. It's necessary. Yeah. And we come together, basically we were called to action by at Occupy Oakland. They had a day for all occupations to start to bring attention to the prison system in America right now. Where right now, I mean, we're facing, less than 10% of the world's population, but we have 25% of the world's prison population.
How about that?
So there's a very serious problem here.
Yeah.
And so, we've come together and we're addressing these issues with pretrial incarcerations. I mean, there are several levels of layers of issues that we're addressing out here this morning. So, with that being said, I'm going to pass the mic over to Tajil, who's a local activist and she's just very intelligent and a beautiful, wonderful.
There you go. That's right. Go Tajil.
I do want to talk about why we're here today, but first I just want to draw attention to the things that are going on around the country today. So we're out here, I'm really bad at counting how many people, but maybe 175 something. There's 75 of us, let's just say, out here, but we're not alone. Across the country, hundreds of people are gathered outside of local prisons, outside of politicians' offices, companies that fund private prisons.
Here, here, yeah.
Hundreds of people are gathered to fight against mass incarceration.
That's right.
And And basically, we're all here today in solidarity with the millions of people who are locked up living in cages across this country.
That's right.
And even inside those prison walls, there are people who are recognizing, acknowledging this day and this movement. So, for example, in Ohio, in one of the Supermax prisons in Ohio, there are 20 prisoners who are on a hunger strike today in solidarity with this movement.
All right. All right.
What we want to get out of this day is to educate each other, to share with each other, and most importantly, to build momentum for a movement that is growing across the country. So let's talk a little bit about why we're here today. So as many of you know, and as people have already said when they're getting on the mic, is that incarceration in this country is out of control. As Sheikha said, we have 5% of the world's population, more than 20% of the world's prison population. We lock up more people than any country in the world, more than Russia, China, Germany, what you name it. We lock up more people, and it's not because we have more crime. We absolutely do not. The crime rates are the same or lower in this country. So what is all of this all about? Why are we here? What is mass incarceration really about?
Racism.
Exactly. Oh, cool. All you have to do is look at who is locked up to know the answer to that question, which is that the criminal justice system, as we have
injustice,
it here,
injustice.
Injustice system is about controlling, oppressing, and destroying black and brown people.
All right.
Just the
all
way
right.
institutions in this country have historically controlled, oppressed, and destroyed black and brown people. Now, back in the day, during slavery, during Jim Crow, all that stuff, they were more upfront about that racism, right? They were bold about it. They just said, oh, you're black, you're brown, you don't have rights, you're not equal, that's it. Now, today, in the post-racial America we live in, we got a black president, they don't say that. What they've done is that they've taken out the word black, they've taken out the word brown, and they've inserted in that the word criminal.
That's right.
So if you're young, if you're black, if you're Latino, if you're undocumented, you are a criminal and you have no rights.
That's right.
Now, I just want to be clear about one thing, that all of this, the system they have created, is not about crime. It is not about crime, it is not about criminality. And you know that when you look at the history of prisons in this country. In 1980, I think John was saying this before, 1980, the prison population was 300,000. Over the course of 30 years, the prison population has skyrocketed to 2.3 million people. And that skyrocketing is not a result of a spike in violent crime. In fact, violent crime has stayed steady or declined over that time. That prison population is a result of the war on drugs. More than half a million of the people who are locked up in prisons in this country are locked up for drug offenses. Three quarters of those people are black and Latino. Now, that you might think, okay, three quarters of the people who are drug offenders are black and Latino. No, all of the statistics show that black and Latino people do not use or sell drugs at higher rates than any other race. In fact, the statistics show that actually white people use and sell drugs at slightly higher rates than black and Latino people.
That's right.
So the point is clear that all of these words we hear in the media, criminals, law and order, tough on crime, all of that stuff is not about crime. That stuff is code for the new Jim Crow. You don't have a right to walk down the street and not be harassed and abused by the police.
That's right.
You don't have a right in court to get meaningful representation or to have a lawyer who's actually going to fight for you. You don't have a right when you're locked up to have human interaction, to have fresh air, or to be even treated like a human being. And then if you're lucky enough to get out of the system, you don't have a right to meaningfully participate in society. You can't get a job because employers can legally discriminate against you. You can't get housing benefits, public benefits, access to loans for education, because all those agencies are legally able to discriminate against you. You can't vote because the federal government is able to. I'm sorry, what? Okay, I'm sorry. So nationally, you're right. Nationally, a lot of places,
you
can't vote. Yeah, and in certain cities, and in D.C., my friend Deborah is going to be talking about how it's affecting D.C. residents. So I'm going to stop because there's a lot of people who are smarter than me, who know more, who can talk about this issue. I can't say this enough, is that this really is the civil rights issue of our day. There's a movement building, there's momentum for it, and I hope to be there with all of you for that.
Say no to the new Jim Crow. Say no to the new Jim Crow.
All right. right, now I'm going to pass the microphone over to Deborah, who knows a little bit more about the D.C. jails and can speak to on that on the state, the current state of D.C. jails.
Hey.
First again, they know the video. Face to face is the way to go.
Here, yeah.
They want to implement a system over here where our inmates over here at this district jail have to be visited by a video screen over at another facility. The renovation of that facility for this purpose is going to take millions of dollars. Those dollars can be well spent right there in that jail.
Here.
The environmental and sanitary conditions of the jail need to be upgraded.
That's right.
They can spend money there. They don't. They give them minimum. They give the inmates minimum hygiene products when they come in. They give them a little bit, enough to say they gave it to them, but it's not enough. They need new mattresses. You know what the result can be from sleeping on bad mattresses. The bed bugs, other types of, you know, mics and everything, they could do that. There's a lot more. They could renovate the space that they have for visiting right now. They can upgrade those phones. They can widen that area. And then the director has told two different groups in 1 week that one of the reasons is because they're not able to have visitation on weekends and holidays because of staff shortage. But you're going to have to pay the staff for them to visit over there, so why can't they pay for them to visit right here?
Here. That's right.
A very poor excuse.
Big lies, lies.
And then lies. But the real bad part about this, the sister just talked about the national and how this happens on a national level. These are our own local leaders making these decisions.
That's right.
These are our local politicians, our local directors, our own local local leaders that are making these decisions like this. So we need to just keep on fighting this system, fighting for these brothers and sisters, because just like she talked about, they can't get a job. When you walk out, like Michelle Alexander said, what do we wear? I'm a returning citizen, but we have that badge of inferiority.
That's right.
Badge of inferiority is the felony from the felony arrest. So thank you. Say no to video. Face to face is the way to go. And one more thing. The families, the real importance of that is that a lot of the people at the jail are returning home from far away places. Some of them have, like my own son, he came home, he had to spend a year after 4 years in prison away, he had to spend a year at the jail for his misdemeanor charge. Okay, so I had to see him through a glass. So a lot of them are getting charges and being shipped off to who knows where, because DC does not own their own prisoners anymore. They gave them up to the federal. You know, so now they're going who knows where, and these last few visits, they have to see them on a video. You know what it means to that child to be able to touch that glass, and his parent, mother or father, put their hand in that glass, and they look into each other's eyes and say, I love you, I'll see you, you know, whatever they have to say, but it's more. You cannot do that through a glass. Say no to video. Face-to-face is the way to go.
Right. Face-to-face is the way to go. Say no to video. Face-to-face is the way to go. Say no.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Let's give a round of applause one more time for Deborah. I'd like to also kind of drop in there. I don't know if it's been addressed already, but D.C. is one of the only places where people have pre-trial incarceration, which means that before somebody is convicted of a crime, they're put in jail and have to wait for their trial, which means people are taken from their homes. They can't go to work. They can't feed their children. They can't pay their bills. They disappear, and then you're in jail. So imagine trying to tell your job, oh, where have you been for the past week, month? Oh, I was in jail. Automatically, you're criminalized. And then automatically, you know, people have to suffer before they've even been, before they've even had the chance to be trialed in court. That is a very major issue. That's why we're out here. And the reason why we're out here is because we have the voice and the ability to be able to speak out, to say something, and to do something. And if we don't continue to, people will continue to make decisions that that affect our communities, and we will continue to have to suffer. So just keep that in mind while you're out here today, and when you go back into your day, into your regular lives, and you guys are, you know, talking to people. Just these are things to keep conversations that need to continue to happen. Thank you. And with that, the next person up is Phil.
Thank you all for coming out today. It's really important. I want to talk, one reason why we're out here talking about mass incarceration is because there are too many people in this facility. One thing not everybody knows is there's a private jail next door to this D.C. jail called the Correctional Treatment Facility. It's owned by D.C., but the Corrections Corporation of America runs it for a profit. They make profits off our bodies. It's important to understand that and to know that that's happening. Corrections Corporation of America has been written about in the last couple of weeks. They're the biggest prison corporation. They have put out some information in the last couple of weeks how they are interested in taking over state prison systems around the country. And in return, they wanted to guarantee that the state could guarantee 90% occupancy of those prisons. These people want to take it over as long as you can guarantee us the bodies. So all this talk about, you know, cutting back on prison populations, nah, because CCA has some money to be made from it. One other factor I think to think about here in D.C., is we got a lot of folks, 20% or so in this jail, who are here on bail, on a parole revocation. They haven't committed a crime, They broke the rules of their parole allegedly. So they get held in this jail for 3 or 4 months or so until they're decided, oh yeah, you broke your parole and we're gonna send you away. This is big business. D.C. sends as many people to prison for parole revocations as they do for committing felonies. Right. This is crazy. Yes, as many people for not breaking the law as for breaking the law. So why do they do that? Well, one reason they do that because there's big money in it, not only for CCA, but we've been focusing a lot, folks at Occupy D.C. Criminal Justice Committee have been focusing on Wells Fargo Bank.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's been information about actions there every Friday. Wells Fargo is a collaborator with the GEO Group. The GEO Group runs something called Rivers Correctional Institution. It's a couple steps here, but basically they arrest you in D.C. on a parole revocation for not breaking the law. They pull you in here for a few months, and then they ship you down to Rivers where somebody can make more money off your body. They don't give a crap what happens to you, but there's money to be made by both GEO Group and by Wells Fargo. So what people demand, boycott Wells Fargo. We need to stop this prison pipeline that's going on right here. We need fewer people in this jail. Thank you all for coming out. It's great to see everybody. Occupy DC Criminal Justice Committee. DC Prisoners Project. Thank you.
Hey, thanks everybody. We're going to do a little open mic here because there are a lot of people with experience. First of all, can I see a hand? Let's see hands. Who spent time in this hellhole? And also, who has loved ones in that hellhole right now or has had them? Let's see hands. Look at that. So many people affected. There's going to be more and more, too, if we don't build a movement to stop that.
That's right.
Good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to say that what you see is the foundation of this movement.
That's right.
Against the new Jim Crow.
That's right.
Michelle Alexander said that mass incarceration is beyond incarceration.
That's right.
That it is the laws, the policies, and regulations of this country here.
That's right.
And she said that this system cannot be reformed.
All right.
We cannot talk about reforming an unjust criminal justice system.
That's right.
That survived on the back of incarcerating black, brown, poor people. That our call must be to abolish prisons around the country, to release all nonviolent drug offenders,
right,
to end the war on drugs.
All right.
That must be our call. Right. When you look at a D.C. jail, you look at a horror story. You look at men and women who suffer mental health issues that are basically in solitary confinement.
That's right.
No treatment.
Who
treatment.
Sleep in all kind of horrible conditions. When you look at security, sometimes non-involved, violence is a way of life in D.C. jail.
Yes.
And then as Deborah spoke about the video conference, we who've been incarcerated know that even though the visits were separated by a plexus glass, but when you put your hand up at the glass and your loved one put a hand up at the glass or he put his hand up the glass, there's a vibration that you feel.
Yes, yes.
And now we're talking about video conference visits where it may appear as though your family's in California somewhere, your loved one is in California somewhere, there's no personal contact. That's but right. The justification is security, lack of staff. It's more than that, brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. It's a continuation of dehumanizing.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. Men and women who are incarcerated. And so we must continue to build this movement here.
Say it again.
We must continue to build this movement. I don't care how you look, what your religious affiliation may be.
That's right.
That we must build this movement.
That's right.
Against the new Jim Crow.
That's right on.
And I suggest that everyone read Michelle Alexander's book, Mass Incarceration, the New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration During the Age of Colorblind.
That's right.
Because she make it crystal clear what our responsibility is, why so many black men are locked up around the country. Some folks say, well, they got white people locked up also. We do not disagree with that. But the majority of black men, brown men, and poor people. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Brother Yango. We have a few more people want to speak. Sister who knows the criminal injustice system quite well, Victoria. Victoria, come on up, say a few words about your experience.
Hello.
Hey.
I guess I do know the criminal justice system quite well personally. My father did like 20 years. My grandfather did like 25. Just one of my uncles did like 10. So my father was just released last year. But I think what hasn't been talked about is like locking people up with drug problems.
Right.
My grandmother is, I think she's in her 50s. But she continues to get locked up now because she's a drug problem. And so I think that, Ron's about to talk about that. But it hasn't been talked about. And that's like such an issue is that people need like treatment programs. And instead of giving them treatment, we just lock them up.
Yeah.
And so I've been sort of in this personally. A lot of my family members have been in jail. And when you have family members in jail, it's like you do time on the outside too. I know that's like a saying now. I just got hip to that saying like a couple weeks ago. Ron's gonna talk about, you know, the drug treatment problem and things like that. But yeah, so I just wanted to. Yeah, I grew up born and raised here, so yeah.
All right. Okay, Victoria. All right.
And to piggyback on what Victoria was saying, that first of all, that 60% of the folks down Rivers, you know, in North Carolina where D.C. residents go, 60% are down there for parole violations.
Yeah.
Parole violations. And out that 60%, 80% down there for a non-violent drug offense.
Damn.
80% a non-violent drug offense. So drug is a mental health, public health issue, not a criminal justice issue.
That's right. That's right.
It's not a criminal justice issue.
Right.
It's a mental health and a public health issue.
That's right.
Yeah, Victoria hit on about the recidivism of someone in her family, right? Instead of getting us treatment, they'd rather to continue to lock us up. And once you get locked up, there's nothing for you to come back on outside. There's no real rehabilitation. There's no treatment. There's no treatment on the inside. And you come back to the same community. Now you have a drug conviction on your record, because you know now that everybody does criminal background checks. I did a campaign over southeast of San Elizabeth, building Homeland Security, and guys were going there for construction jobs to move dirt from here to there, right? And they were going back 15, 20 years and denying them jobs to move dirt because of convictions of 20 years ago. 20 years ago, right? So once you get that, you stigmatize, and someone mentioned earlier, once you get stigmatized, it's now, even in housing, I know a person who was locked up three to four times over a six-year period of time. Never convicted. Never convicted. Listen what I'm saying. Never convicted. But the employer said, you've been arrested too many times. Never convicted. You just been arrested, and that shows to your bad character. The same thing around housing.
That's right.
Right? They can deny you housing. Never been convicted of anything. Right? But because you've been arrested too many times. And public housing, if I know someone who lives in public housing and I'm just coming home, I can't stay with them. Because they can be evicted if I'm coming home and they let me stay with them in public housing. Right? If I live in public housing and someone in my family sells drugs who come visit me once a week, they can put me out of public housing. This is what happened, y'all. This is what happened. And I say about us as a people in the country, we are asleep at the wheel.
That's right.
We are asleep at the wheel. It starts with people who are returning citizens and being criminalized. It's not going to stop there. Then it's going to go on and on and on and on. So when are we going to say no? We need to say no.
No!
We need to say no, Mas. We're not taking it no more.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. D.C. in 2008 proclaimed itself a human rights city.
Okay.
That's a joke. No to the new Jim Crow.
Yeah. Right. Someone said it's a joke, right? They proclaimed themselves a human rights city. So that means a right to housing.
That's right.
You know, a right to a job that's a family-sustaining job.
That's right.
You know, a right to education. That's all that's part of human rights.
That's right.
Once you are a convicted felon returning, you have none of these rights. This is not a human rights city.
That's right.
This is not a human rights city. So if we all believe in what we are here today for, and this movement that Yango and a whole lot of folks are talking about, you know, we need to say no mas and no to the new Jim Crow.
Right. That's right.
Those are some of the voices from a recent protest outside D.C. jail. The action was organized by Occupy D.C.'s Criminal Injustice Committee and recorded by Luke Kuhn of D.C. Indie Media. Among the speakers we just heard from was Victoria Clark, whose family has spent more than a century behind bars. Shortly after she addressed the crowd of 75 outside D.C. jail, Clark spoke with the Fight Back. Your name?
Victoria Clark.
What brings you outside D.C. jail today?
Just want to get involved in protesting mass incarceration. I have personal experience, family members who've been locked up, and I just want to give a voice to them and, you know, get other people involved.
You spoke a little while ago at this protest outside DC jail and mentioned that your father, grandfather, uncle, grandmother have all been locked up.
Yeah. And my dad did 22 years. My grandfather did 25. One of my uncles did 10. Another one of my uncles did 7. My grandmother's been in and out of jail basically her whole life, but for doing drugs, not for any type of violent offense. But all in all, the total number of time spent behind bars in my family is well over 100 years.
You also mentioned that it's not just the individual who gets locked up, but family members, when their loved ones go to jail, they end up doing time on the outside as well.
Yeah, I just learned that term, time on the outside. You do, you know, for the first, 22 years of my life, a part of me was in prison, I guess, with my father. You know, same goes with my mom. You know, her dad was in jail for the first 23 years of her life. You don't really see what you're missing until, like, I guess you're around people who have that. You know, I didn't understand that. I didn't really see the void that was missing from my father not being there until I started hanging around people who have fathers. And you do time on the outside. You do.
How does it, when you finally realize being around people who have had the father, what's the difference that you see?
Well, for me, I actually, I adjusted really well. But other people that I grew up around who didn't have fathers didn't adjust well. And some people, you know, who don't have fathers can't handle it. Can't handle it. And they can't handle not having that direction that, you know, good fathers give you. You know, they can't handle that. And then they end up, falling into the same cycles of dealing drugs, of you know, those same cycles of, yeah, poverty, drugs, crime, things like that. So, yeah, it definitely pays to have, you know, two parents at home. Yeah, it does.
Now, your grandmother, she continues to get locked up for a drug addiction.
Yeah.
What would be the best approach for someone like your grandmother? Is it helpful to continually get in and out of jail?
Well, so my grandmother, since she's so old, she's not so old, she's like 58. She's sort of lived her life like this since she was like a teenager. So I think it's hard to, everybody that she is surrounded by does drugs, all of her friends, everybody. But ideally, I would like for her to get like an inpatient treatment and just go away from DC. I think that would help her a lot. But it's hard, you know, what do you do when you've been on drugs your whole life and then you get off? You haven't worked for years, like you've never worked. You know, there's a 20, 30 year gap. You know, how do you go then apply for a job? You know, but my concern now is I have friends who are like on drugs now and are not, I see them going down the same path as my grandmother. And I think, and they have been sort of criminalized for having this drug addiction. I think what will benefit them is going away and to an in treatment program and getting help. I think that would be very helpful.
You're a native Washingtonian?
Yeah, born and raised D.C. I love D.C. I love D.C., born and raised.
You mentioned you have friends who are struggling with drugs. Are they also your friends who have been arrested?
Yeah.
I recently read, or am reading, Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, and it really makes clear just how even when a sentence is completed, it's not really completed in the sense that upon release, the access to a job is...
It's not
limited, non-existent.
I have one friend who has been locked up, but she has, thankfully, she graduated from college. So she has had access and have been able to get jobs. But all the rest of my friends, mostly my male friends, have not been able to get jobs. Primarily because, I mean, yeah, they have that criminal record, but they also don't have education. They didn't graduate from even high school. And then they're forced to, and then a lot of them have kids now, and then like you just see, it sucks. You see this cycle repeating itself. Yeah, they can't get jobs. And it's not that they don't want to work, they just can't get hired. And then, I mean, so many of them now have kids, and they don't have stable homes. And so, yeah, it is like that. You can't get jobs, you can't get hired, and then the cycle just keeps repeating itself.
What needs to happen?
Wow, a lot needs to happen. I think, most importantly, I think that the whole criminal justice system is tainted is not the word. I think it needs to be dismantled. I think that we need to do away with for-profit prisons. I think when you make it so that you a company or a corporation, you know, makes money off of locking people up, there is no incentive not to lock people up. So I think we need to do away with how we go about locking people up. And I think there also needs to be a focus on sort of just because someone sort of commits a crime, we shouldn't rush to lock people up. I think that we should figure out ways to really help people. A lot of people just need, like, social services, you know? And I think that gets lost in this whole tough on crime is that, like, at the end of the day, it's a people. Like, we all have, like, kind of similar needs, you know? Like, everybody just wants to, you know, have a house and be able to go to a good school, whether it be public or private, you know? And, yeah, so I think it's lost. The humanity in all of this is lost. Humanity does get lost when you're talking about millions and billions of dollars that can be made off locking people up. But in the end, it's like society is suffering the most, you know, I think. Because, you know, you lock people up and then you have the family members out here and then the family struggles, you know, and then as a result, a lot of people whose family members are locked up, they eventually will be locked up. And I think it puts a drain on society, I think. I mean, that's just what I think.
A lot of the folks who are locked up is for drug use. One of the speakers said that when you look at drug use amongst whites, blacks, it's the same, basically. But the rates that people are locked up, it's not at all the same.
No, not at all. I mean, that goes to show you, that racism does play a part in sort of who gets arrested and who gets sentenced. You know, most people who are doing time for drug offenses are black and brown. That is true. Yeah.
You recently graduated from Temple University?
Yeah, I graduated from Temple, majoring in history. Right now, I'm an investigator at the Public Defender Service. So, helping our public defenders sort of build cases so that they can have a chance against these discovery laws in D.C. I don't know if you're familiar with discovery laws in
Nope.
D.C., but the prosecution doesn't have to turn over anything that they have. They don't have to tell the defense, you know, what witnesses they're calling until they call the witness at trial.
Is that right?
That's right. So my job as an investigator is to go out and find witnesses so that the defense can have a chance, can have a shot. A lot of people don't know that. It is not fair at all.
And you're looking at the possibility of further getting into the law and possibly going to law school?
Hopefully I get to go to law school. I got into the Northeastern University and the University of Washington. I'm a finalist for the public law scholarship at Northeastern. Hopefully I can get it. And then I can continue this and be a public defender somewhere in this country.
How do you see yourself using the law if you are to get the scholarship and get yourself into law school? How would you see yourself use the law going forward?
I was thinking about being a public defender. I want to do something with prisoners' rights. You know, we got to end this, you know, because I want to do something, getting prisoners more rights. I definitely think that I want to spend a few years being a public defender and moving on to maybe work in women's prisons. I'm just so close to this issue. I didn't realize how close I was until you make it out of your situation. You know, because when you're still in your situation, it's, you know, it is what it is. But then when you make it out of your situation, you know, and you have a chance to sort of, you know, be outside and looking in, and you realize how crazy it is to grow up with almost, you know, every other family member in prison. Like, that's, you think that's normal, but it's not. It's not normal. I'm only realizing now that it's not normal for people to be locked up, you know? And that's the kind of environment I grew up with. What's normal to have people in jail, to have family members, to have friends in jail. So, and to meet people who, like, don't have anybody in, don't have any family members in jail, it's kind of crazy, but they're out there. So, yeah.
Victoria Clark, any final thoughts you care to share as we stand outside D.C. jail?
We got to say no to the new Jim Crow. I mean, that's why we're out here. We got to say no to this mass incarceration. We need to educate more people about, you know, how much money is being made from locking people in cages, you know. And, I think if more people knew that, more people knew what tough on crime was really about, you know, then I don't think that they would be so passionate about it if they knew what it was really about.
So. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
That was native Washingtonian Victoria Clark, who spoke with the Fight Back outside D.C. jail at a recent protest. This is the Fight Back, thefightback.org, broadcasting here on We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM. When we return, we'll hear from clergy, union activists, and native Washingtonians who say Clark Construction isn't doing enough for district residents.
Once I built a railroad, made it wrong, made it race again. I built a railroad, and now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and line. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Oh, say, do you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Brother, can you spare a dime?
That was Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, sung by Allison Moorer. This is The Fight Back. We now turn to the $950 million City Center construction project, which is providing too few jobs to district residents, say activists and clergy members.
Ho, ho! Construction's got to go! Hey, hey! Ho, ho! Clark Construction's got to go! Hey, hey! Ho, ho! Clark Construction's got to go! Hey, hey! Ho, ho! Clark Construction's got to go! Hey, hey!
Thursday, a coalition of churches, community groups, and labor organizations known as DC Jobs or Else shut down entrances to the City Center construction site.
We're grateful for the police presence. We're showing them that we're peaceful. We're showing them that we mean business, that we're purposeful. But we want jobs.
Yes.
This is our city.
Our city.
This is our city.
Our city.
This is our city.
Our city.
And these are our jobs.
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 So we're going to shut them down this
time.
One more time around.
City Center is a nearly $1 billion construction project being built on 5 city blocks of public land on the site of the old convention center in downtown D.C. Construction services are being provided by Clark Construction and Smoot Construction. D.C. Jobs or Else says too few district residents are being hired, despite the significant public investment, which includes some of the world's most sought-after real estate. Before Thursday's march to the construction site kicked off, Pastor Patrick Walker, president of the Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference of Washington, D.C., spoke at the Greater New Hope Baptist Church just around the corner from City Center.
We wanted to launch an initial prayer walk. We wanted to pull this initial meeting off, and I am not discouraged, my brother. This place should be packed, and yes, Pastor Bennett, it will be packed one day. But I checked the record, and there were 37 persons that gathered at the embassy, the South African embassy, when the first protest against apartheid started. Look around, we have more than 37 in here. If 37 people can begin to break the back of an apartheid government in South Africa, what can we do right here in the nation's capital? Are you listening to me? If 37 people can transform an entire nation and topple a government, what can we do if we stand together? So I'm not discouraged. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. We're going to leave this place. We pray. We're going to leave this place. And we're going to gather outside, and we're going to walk around 3 times the site. We're going to walk around in peace. Reverend Gilbert's going to lead us in some songs, and we're going to shout some chants. We're going to shut them down. We want, you know, no work, no peace. Come on, hear somebody. No work, no peace. Amen. We're gonna let them know that we are here. And we're not just going to come today, but we're going to come back. And there are other sites that we're going to go to. And the Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference will play it. We're going to find other pastors that are close to those sites. And when Lyona, Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference, Wednesday clergy, and any other persons who want to stand with us, when they come in, we're going to go in peace. And we're going to have those rallies until Clark and every other major contractor in this city hear our voices. We live in this city. Many of us are born in this city. It's only fair that we have an opportunity to work and feed our families. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Brothers, I'm telling you, I have a good job. I got a good job. I was about to send my daughter off to college. And if they close the door on you, in terms of the laborers, if they close the door on you, your sons, your daughters, your brothers, your sisters, if they close the door in building these buildings, they'll close the door on her when it's time for her to apply for a job. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived because you got a white collar, you got a degree. Don't be deceived because if they close the door on the front end, they'll close it on the back end. And so that's why we're here. Many of these pastors are here. We're here for our sons, we're here for our daughters, for our grandchildren. Because we know if they close the door on you on the front end, when it's time to hire those administrators, time to hire those clerks, and hire those white-collar jobs, they'll do the exact same thing. Because it's systematic racism. And we want to speak truth to power.
That was Pastor Patrick Walker, president of the Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference of Washington, D.C. After Pastor Walker spoke at the Greater New Hope Baptist Church, the group marched on the city center construction site. Here are some of the voices of the protesters, most of whom were native Washingtonians.
I'm from Washington, D.C.
What brings you out here today?
Clock construction. They don't want to give no jobs out.
Tell what you want.
How you doing?
Hi.
My name's Pete Tucker. I report at thefightback.org. What brings you out today? What's your name?
The same old, Dr. Daniel Walker.
I think we spoke outside the 11th Street Bridge.
Yes. Yes. Say it's still the same thing going on. Just fighting back for jobs. We even put in applications, and they haven't called anybody back yet. Not even me. So that's why we out here, to fight for what we want.
How's it going? Can I ask you why you're out here?
Yes.
Your name?
Garvey Jones.
What brings you outside city center today?
That's to try to hire, to try to have a job. I don't have a job. I'm looking for a job. I'm not on probation. I'm not in trouble with the law. I'm entitled to it. I pay taxes, and they're not hiring us.
You want to work?
Yes, I do. Bad. I want to work that bad, yes. To come out here, I don't care how many times, to come out here and protest just to get work, I will do it. I will do it until I get a job, and I will not stop.
Where are you from?
Here.
Born and raised?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Here.
Where in D.C.?
Southeast.
What's it like to see, as we look at this project, 7 cranes, just a massive project, one of many. Oh, this might be the largest going on right now in D.C. When you see this massive amount of development and you, a native Washingtonian, are unable to secure work, what does that mean to you?
It means that they really don't care about us because of the stereotype, how specifically African Americans going around stealing and in crime and drunk all the time. So they feel as though that we are all drunk and crazy, you know what I mean? And,
no, they don't.
On drugs.
They feel
so they feel as fact, though that...
Look they back, feel back. That the simple fact is we want scale pay. You're not going to come work us like you work the Hispanic and give them $10 an hour. And it's a scale paying job that pays $22.50. So we understand as D.C. residents, we want the scale pay. It was a federal government building. It's a federal government contract. We get scale pay. So they work there for $10 all day long. So that put us in an economical crunch because I can't take care of my children in my own city where I can catch the bus or walk to work because I'm black, because I want the scale pay. You can't give me $10 and tell me going that hole. You can't give me $15 and tell me going that hole. I know that's a scale paying job. Give me what the law requires and let me take care of my children. Honestly, you can work me in the feds, but you won't work me in the street. That's how the white men think. The 1%, not saying you, but the 1% of the white people don't want us to work because of simple fact, they want to lock us up for the rest of our life, and then they put us to work in a penitentiary for 13 cents an hour. Now you tell me what's wrong with that.
What's your name?
My name is Carter Bay, Eric Carter Bay.
Do you think crime would go down if jobs opened up for district residents?
I think a lot of stuff would go down and a lot of stuff would go up. Crime is one. Stealing, robbing, and all that crazy stuff. They're trying to feed their children. You put my back against the wall. As a man, I got three kids. I got to feed them some kind of way. So if I go in a Safeway still or go somewhere to feed my family. Now, what they can do if they work me, the economical boost that I make because I shop in D.C. will go up. So it's a yes and it's a no. Yes, crime will go down, and yes, the economical benefits will come up in the city.
Do you have a message for Clark Construction?
Clark, I just want to let you know, and I pray that you let them hear what I'm saying. We want a fair shake at what's in our city. We're not talking about what's in Rockville. We're talking about what's in D.C., the nation capital of me being a resident of 220. That's my zip code. So now you're telling me you can't work me, but you got work in my area where I can walk to. I just want Clark to know that if you don't hire me, we're going to shut you down every chance we get. And the more we hit you, I hope it hurts your pocket and make you pregnant.
Where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C., Southeast. I graduated in Anacostia in 1984. I'd have got that gonna have a scale paying job, and I can't even get in here to work my carpentry skill.
What do you think of when you hear the word gentrification?
Gentrification is what they're doing to us now, because if we don't work and you lock all the youth up, they cannot produce babies. I'm 48 years old. You probably wouldn't believe that because I'm young looking. I know I'm handsome.
You are.
I'm pretty. But I tell you what, I'm not making no more kids. So if you lock a young man up for robbing and stealing, trying to take care of his children for 20, 30 years of his life, by the time he come out, he can't produce no more. So what you doing is genocizing us. You understand me? So if you lock me up 15, 20 years of my life, what you think I'm going to become institutionalized? And I'm going to be scared of the city. So now you drive killing me all over again. It's just a modern slavery. That's how they're killing us. If you don't work me, I'm going to have to rob you. I'm going to have to do something to feed my children. And all I want is to work. I don't want nothing else. They don't have to give me nothing but a job. And I'll take care of myself. You know what I mean? And that's fair. They got $700 million for this project, $3.4 billion for the St. Elizabeth project, and $330 million for the 7-0 project. Man, I'm smart. I read up on shit. I'm telling you, these people is just trying to push us to a point that we have to commit crime to feed our children. You know, they not used to eating oodles and noodles. We are. But give me a chance so I can have a piece of steak once in a while. You know what I mean? Fair is fair, man. You're in our city. Give somebody a job. You know, I'm not just saying me. Somebody. You know, if you don't pick me, pick somebody out the city to change their life, to change their thought pattern. Because the thought is the cause of all this shit. You know what I mean? Because if I think that you're not going to work me, the best thing I can do is what I think I can do. And that's wrong. So we getting out of that. Only thing we asking for is a free shake, a free job, and a free chance. Maybe they scared because by the time you put me on this site, I might be a foreman because I'm so intelligent. You know what I mean? I don't miss a day at work. So how can you put anything in front of me that I can't accomplish? You know, let's be fair. The 1%ers is killing us, man. You know what I mean? That's the only thing about it. The 1%ers is killing us. We have to do something about that. We all do have to do something about that because everybody feeling this crunch. Black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, everybody in the United States is feeling this crunch. And it's nothing we can do but what we're doing now to show the people in the world that we are trying to fight for what's ours in our city. So you're not coming in our city taking nothing from us. You take something from me, I take something from you, I get locked up. Clark is stealing all these jobs. Let's try to lock their ass up. They thieves, man. They come in the city, steal money, and we can't lock them up. But what we're going to do, we'll shut their ass down. Okay, stick with me, man. I'm going to teach you something. You listen to me.
Thanks.
Come on with me.
Thanks for your time.
Yes, sir.
Those are some of the voices of the native Washingtonians at Thursday's protest, which shut down the entrances to the city center construction site. Among the clergy members marching around the site was Reverend George Gilbert, Jr., Chairman of the Civic and Social Action Committee of the Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference of Washington, D.C. Your name?
George C. Gilbert, Sr., Pastor of Holy Trinity United Baptist Church in Northeast Washington.
Pastor Gilbert, what brings you out on H Street today as you circle City Center?
Well, we see the injustice that's being done against the residents of the District of Columbia. You have hundreds, thousands of men and women who want to work and who are able and capable of working. And here we are at a $700 billion work site, and Clark won't even hire these D.C. residents to work on this job.
You spoke a little earlier in the church before heading over here, and you mentioned that race might have something to do with this.
Well, we know that race has a lot to do with it. We've found out we've carried over 1,500 African-American men and women to Clark's job site right here, and they would not even, they received the applications, but not a one of those persons have been contacted about a job since the applications have been submitted. And yet, they are hiring the Hispanic, they are hiring others, and we feel that there's some injustice in that. And they are just not willing to even go to the unions and get union workers who we know can pass the drug test and who have been properly taught and trained. You don't need a whole lot of training to do the labor work here, so they can't use that as an excuse.
Can you talk about not just this project, but the unprecedented amount of development that is taking place in the District of Columbia and how it is benefiting or not the folks who have lived here for many years, several generations?
This is happening across the city. It's purpose. They are targeting African Americans. They don't realize that African Americans need to work, support their families, put food on the table, pay their rent, but as long as they won't let them work, then it's a destruction. It's devastating to the whole family. And we're fighting against that. We're fighting because we know that ultimately, if our people can't work, it destroys the whole fiber of the family.
What has happened when you, as a senior member of this city and other pastors, have approached Clark? What have those conversations been like?
Well, Clark won't really put a face to the company. They send out people who will be bufferers, but we have yet to meet Clark, whether it's Jim, Robert, whatever his name is. We have yet to meet him. He sends some buffer to talk with us, and the company declares that they are within the law to hire who they want to hire. But we realize that the law stipulates that 50% of any of these construction jobs ought to be hiring residents of the District of Columbia. However, there's no enforcement of these laws. So they go from city to city, place to place, hire who they want to hire instead of following the law.
And the reason that there is a requirement on who can be hired is because you have district investment here. Not an insubstantial amount when it comes to, well, I believe the land is public to begin with.
Yes, it is. It is. It's public land, but the District of Columbia has laws already on the books that stipulate that any project that's built in the District of Columbia, whether it's federal or district project, has to also hire a certain amount of D.C. residents.
So this is what it comes to, having to, pastors and others having to come out and walk around the construction site, close down the entrances in order for these concerns to be heard by the higher-ups at Clark.
Yes. We are a very peaceful group, but there has to be a moral voice. What is right is right. What is wrong is wrong.
That was Reverend George Gilbert Jr., Chairman of the Civic and Social Action Committee of the Missionary Baptist Ministers Conference of Washington, D.C. Tonight's show was engineered by Mark Taylor. I'm Pete Tucker. You can find this show and all of the Fightback's reporting at thefightback.org. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Fightback.